and Murph. What we're going to look at tonight, Murph, I will get to in a second. What we're going to look at tonight is we're going to look at something different. We're going to look at fasting. Fasting in Muslim tradition and fasting, lahavdil, in Jewish tradition. Specifically, there are two fasts that I want to compare here, and that is the fast of Ramadan, which is, as we know, starting very soon. It started, actually. Did you see that article on CNN.com today about the soap opera about Ramadan that's taking the Mideast by storm right now? So it's very timely, okay? So Ramadan is underway, right? You can check it on your BlackBerry. Ramadan is underway, and Yom Kippur is coming up. So what's great about this is that I'm not comparing these two things in a vacuum. According to many scholars, if not most, the origins of Ramadan actually are based on Yom Kippur. So I'm not just taking two things side by side that happen to be similar behaviors, but I'm actually taking things, you know, one sort of jumped off from the other. Okay? As you know, you can always ask questions, stop me, challenge, think. Just do me a favor. It's still only my second week here. I remember many names, but not every name. So even if I know you, say your name so that everybody else will know you. Okay? You know who I'm talking about, right? Elisheva? Just say your name anyway. Okay? No favoritism here. No nepotism here. So I promise that instead of going for 50 minutes like I did last week or an hour, I'm really going to go till 8. So we are moving. Okay? You ready? 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 Okay, origins of Ramadan. Here we go. There are two sources when we talk about Muslim law. There are two sources that we look to. There is a source, and this is going to sound quite familiar, there is the written law, namely the Quran, which literally means the recitation, because according to Islam, the angel Gabriel said to Muhammad, speak, recite, and he started reciting the Quran. And then there is the oral tradition. The oral tradition is known as the hadith or the sunnah. What that is, it's the behaviors of Muhammad. What you end up getting is you have so-and-so said in the name of so-and-so who said in the name of so-and-so that they saw Muhammad do X. And they don't call him Muhammad, they call him the prophet. So that's what we're going to see. They saw him do X. They saw him, they heard him say Y. So in addition to what you have in the Quran, you also have these hadith telling you the way that Muhammad behaved and the way that people around him behaved. Of course, there is some other stuff in between where they started, you know, you have a body of 900 sunnah, 900 of these sayings. How do you know which one's authoritative, which one isn't? So, of course, they developed schools of law. There are four distinct schools of law to deal with this, how they deal with which is authoritative, which isn't. That's really not our issue. But let's start with the Quran on Ramadan. Three, what's called, I think the plural is ayat. An ayat means a sign. Each one, each line in the Quran, each verse in the Quran is called an ayat, okay? So there are three that are very significant for us, and they're in Surah chapter 2, ayat 183 to 185. So let's look at the beginning. O believers, fasting is prescribed for you as it was for those before you. Perchance you will guard yourselves against evil. Okay? I underline for you as it was for those before you, because according to the tafsir, the commentary on the Quran, this means just like the people of the book fast, you should fast. Specifically, what they connect it to is check out number three, the Sunnah sources, the more oral tradition. Narrated Ibn Abbas. The Prophet came to Medina and saw the Jews fasting on the day of Ashura. Day of Ashura? Does that mean anything to anyone? Ashura, 10. Asur, 10. Yom Kippur. They saw them fasting when he came to Medina. This is in 622. What happens is, according to Islam, in 610, they believe that Muhammad started receiving the Quran, and that goes on until 632. In 622, he finally leaves his hometown of Mecca because he's being persecuted by the pagans there, and he goes to Medina. Medina is not the name of the place. Medina means Medina, state. Medina is a place called Yathrib. It's where there was a big Jewish community, a Yemenite Jewish community. He went there to get asylum, to gain asylum from the people in Mecca. He gets to Medina, and he sees the Jews fasting on the day of Ashura. He asked them about that. They replied, now this may not sound like what we say about Yom Kippur. This is a good day, a day on which Allah, they probably didn't say Allah, rescued Bnei Israel from their enemy. So Moses fasted this day. That's what Yom Kippur is about. That's what he said they told him. The prophet said, we have more claim over Moses than you. So the prophet fasted on that day and ordered the Muslims to fast on that day. Okay? One more, narrated Ibn Abbas. When Muhammad arrived at Medina, the Jews were observing the fast of Ashura. Now this fills in the 10th of Muharram. Muharram is the same as Tishrei. It was the first month of their year. At that time, the Arabs were using a fixed lunar calendar, the same way we have a fixed lunar calendar. It's a lunar calendar that has 354 days, and in order to account for those 11 days that are missing, we have a leap month every so often. They did the same thing. So when they came on the 10th of Muharram, that was the 10th of Tishrei. Okay? And they said, this is the day when Moses became victorious over Pharaoh. Another thing to add to your Yom Kippur Machzor. Not only, right, this is the day when Moses became victorious over Pharaoh. On that, the prophet said to his companion, you Muslims have more right to celebrate Moses' victory than they have, so observe the fast on this day. Okay? That's what people connect it to when it says in 2:183, fasting is prescribed for you as it was for those before you. Perchance you will guard yourselves against evil. This fasting, according to the tafsir, according to the commentators, this fast is one day, Yom Kippur. One day. Okay? The next verse, though, says something different, according to the commentators. Fasting for a fixed number of days. But if any of you is ill or on a journey, the prescribed number should be made up from days later. For those who can do it with hardship is a ransom. The feeding of one that is indigent. That's how you make up. If you can't fast, feed someone who's poor. But he that will give more of his own free will, it is better for him, and it is better for you that ye fast if ye only knew. This is interesting. It goes from being one day, fast like the people before you did, to fast for a fixed number of days. Now, rather speculative, one second, there is a very important scholar by the name of Goyten who lived at the beginning of the 20th century who thought that what happened here is that they fasted for the Asara Yimei Tshuva. They fasted for the 10 days from Aleph Tishrei to Yud Tishrei, from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. That is very hotly debated among many people. What I said about 2:183 is traditional Islamic explanation. What I'm saying about 2:184 is Gorton's speculation, which I think is rather fascinating to think about. We're going to do the next ayat, and then we're going to come back to Steve's question. Steve or Steg? We're going to go with Steg. I like Steg. So Steg, we're going to get to you in a second. And Mordechai, I haven't forgotten about you. The next, let's go back to Quranic development. Ramadan, who said anything about Ramadan, is the month in which was sent down the Quran as a guide to mankind and also signs for guidance and judgment between right and wrong. So every one of you who is present at his home during that month should spend it in fasting. But if anyone is ill or on a journey, the prescribed period should be made up by days later. God intends every facility for you. He does not want to put you to difficulties. He wants you to complete this prescribed period and to glorify him, etc., etc., etc. Ramadan is very different from the 10th of Muharram. The 10th of Muharram is the 10th of Tishrei, the first month. Ramadan is the 9th month. Okay? And the reason that Muhammad gives for the 9th month here is what? Great. Now check out the tafsir. Check out the commentary in number 2. You are the person who just gave us the answer? Barry? Yes. Thanks, Barry. So, it says, these days of the month of Ramadan, wherein the Quran was revealed, from the preserved tablet to the earthly heaven on the night of ordainment, Laylat al-Qadr, from him. The preserved tablet, this is very important. You actually see this throughout the Quran. The preserved tablet is a reference to all of scripture up to the point of... All of scripture up to the point of the Quran, including the Quran. Okay? What the tafsir adds is that not only was the Quran given to Muhammad at this time, but all of scripture before that was given to Muhammad at this time. So right now what we have is, we have on the one hand, they started fasting on Yom Kippur, because that was the time when the Jews were victorious over their... Let's put it this way. When Moses was victorious over his enemies, Moses was victorious over Pharaoh, right? And then they start fasting later on Ramadan instead, because that's when the Quran is given. Right? Is that, that's what we've seen so far? Everybody feel like a good Muslim? You got it? You got it? You know what your colleagues at work or whatever are doing? Okay? So you may know more about this than the average person on the street, right? That's really the truth. Just what you hope so. There you go. So let's just look a little bit further. Let's look at number four. Jewish origins. S.C. Goyton, in his well-known study of the month of Ramadan, argued for a thematic connection between the Muslim month of fasting and the Jewish Day of Atonement. Goyton argued that the Jews of Medina regarded the Day of Atonement as a commemoration. Get this. We're going a little bit of a step further here. Ready? Goyton argued that the Jews of Medina regarded the Day of Atonement as a commemoration of the descent of Moses from Sinai with the Torah. Right? The Jews of Medina thought of the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, as a commemoration of the descent of Moses from Sinai with the Torah. Is that true? There you go. You have to remind me of your name. I'm so embarrassed. Paul, thank you. So, Paul is correct. Yeah, that's true. Right? We do think, traditionally, that the second set of Luchot, and we're going to go through it in a minute, the second set of Luchot was given on Yom Kippur, right? When she came down. Right? Hell, it's getting interesting. It's pretty crazy. So they start off, well, let's just finish. Even though the Muslim traditions about why the Jews fasted on Ashura gives a different explanation. This association is then reflected in Muslim tradition that it was in Ramadan that the Quran came down. In other words, here's the suggestion that we have thus far. Whoever gave me the idea to move this to the right side, instead of to my, well, to my left side, to your right, had the right idea, because last week it was a little pathetic right in my left hand. Okay? So, what we have so far is the Muslims start off fasting on Ashura, which is Yom Kippur. The reason why is because Moses was greater than enemies, right? He beat his enemies. Amazing. Then they change. I'm going to ignore 2184 because there's just too much speculation about it. Okay, 2185. Then they start fasting on Ramadan instead. And how we know it's instead is a different question. On Ramadan instead, which is the ninth month, it's a totally different thing. This becomes pretty much voluntary. This becomes obligatory. And the reason is because Muhammad got the Quran then, right? Now, what Goyton is suggesting is that both of these are still based on Yom Kippur. It's just that the Muslims were trying to distance themselves from the Jews by making it in the ninth month and making it a full month. But it's still commemorating something very similar. Right? Still commemorating God's divine revelation. There is a key difference that hopefully people are thinking about, but we'll get to it. Yeah, Steg.
Since you seem to be emphasizing that Ramadan is the ninth month, just calculating it out, if Muharram is Tishrei and Ramadan is Sivan, so
yep,
Shavuos.
Correct. There's still an important right. Correct. People, believe it or not, some people talk about it. It's not a big deal, according to many. However, what people are very impressed by is this notion of the Jews were saved from Pharaoh, and then you end up turning it into something with the same month of Shavuos, which is the end of that process kind of thing. So it definitely does come up. It's not proof, but it's definitely adduced as additional fuel. So I think that's a great point. Mordechai,
my question was...
Okay, we'll come back to it.
Christianity.
So that's what Goyton suggests. What happened to Ashura? So what's interesting is that Muhammad had a very similar experience to many other religious reformers with the Jews, in that he thought that if he was nice to them, they would convert, and then when they didn't convert, he got upset and was not nice to them. Okay? So that basically happened with the Jews of Yemen by the year, I don't remember, it was, I think, the mid-8th century, the Muslims had completely driven, I mean, Muhammad died in 632. The Muslims had completely driven the Jews out of Yemen. Completely. But at any rate, what had happened about 9 years after he got to Medina, in 631, he got to Medina in 622, in 631, he started to break from the Jewish traditions because he realized that it wasn't going anywhere. So the first thing they did is they said that God prohibited adding a leap month. We have to have a regular lunar calendar, no fixed lunar calendar, i.e. not like the Jews. Now, obviously, I'm telling this from a Jewish perspective. I'm sure a Muslim would say something different about revelation and God revealed and this and that. I'm looking at it from a very different perspective, right? So he says we can't have intercalary months. We cannot add a month to the year. And he also, according to many, this is when he says that we fast on Ramadan and we don't fast on Ashura anymore. So we look at number five, breaking from the Jews. It was the precedent of the fast practiced by the Jews in Medina that triggered the introduction of fasting into the early Muslim community. We know nothing certain about the ascetic rites upheld by the adherents of Muhammad in Mecca. In other words, we hear of nothing with regards to fasting in the earlier years of Muhammad, before 622, when he was in Mecca. We hear nothing. Right? The fasting of Ashura was one of the diverse Jewish rites that were introduced during the emergence of the community, but were given up during the later Medinan period. Indeed, it became the object of polemics once the community wished to distance itself from its monotheistic counterparts. Right? Very similar to the Council of Nicaea in 425, which talks about how the Christians can distance themselves from the Jews. They turn Sabbath into Sunday instead of Shabbat, because it's a way of keeping it, but doing it completely differently. So it's a similar kind of thing, keeping it, but doing it differently. And as Steg points out rightly, in the Shavuos month, saying that that's when the Quran was given. But what happens within Islam to Ashura, to that actual 10th day of Muharram, which very infrequently will now be on the same day as Yom Kippur, because they don't have a leap month anymore, and we do. So the Sunni and the Shia are two different parties within Islam. The Sunni is the majority, and Sunni just means the traditional ones, those who follow the Sunnah, the behavior of Muhammad. And they said the following. This is from their hadith. This is from their oral tradition. Narrated Aisha, she was one of the wives of Muhammad. The tribe of Quraysh, which is where Muhammad was from, used to fast on the day of Ashura in the pre-Islamic period. Right? So they suggest this wasn't from the Jews. It was Arabian pre-Islamic. And then Allah's apostle ordered Muslims to fast on it till the fasting in the month of Ramadan was prescribed. Whereupon Muhammad said, he who wants to fast on Ashura may fast, and he who does not want to fast may not fast. Right? Choose, do what you want. So according to the Sunnis, you can fast on the 10th of Muharram. You don't have to fast on the 10th of Muharram. What becomes quite fascinating is that among the Shia are the minority of Muslims, like the Iranians are Shia. There are a number of countries that are Shia, there are a number of countries that are Sunni, and as we know, they don't like each other, as we see in Iraq. The reason why they don't like each other is because after Muhammad's death, they had a serious power vacuum trying to figure out who would lead. The Shia thought that family members of Muhammad should lead. The Sunni thought that people from his inner circle who were worthy of leading and not just because of heredity should lead. And it led to civil war. Okay, not till about 50 years after his death, but it led to civil war nonetheless. And the Shia, actually, as part of that civil war, they commemorate the 10th of Muharram as something that happened during that civil war. Commemoration of the martyrdom in 680 CE, right, of Hussein, Muhammad's grandson, and the third imam, it was supposed to be the third leader, of Shi'i Islam. Shi'i communities usually reenact the tragedy in a passion play, including self-mortification and displays of sorrow and remorse intended to unite them in Hussein's suffering and death as an aid to salvation on the Day of Judgment. Shi'i communities understand Hussein's martyrdom as a paradigm for the struggle against injustice, tyranny, and oppression. The Shi'ites, they keep the 10th of Muharram as an ascetic day. They not only fast, but they also, they walk through the streets. They actually, you can YouTube this, it's really kind of interesting. If you see in different countries, yes, some people flagellate themselves. It's actually quite interesting. In Middle Eastern countries, you find Shi'i who will make themselves bleed. They walk down the street in a long procession, and what happens is they make a slight gash on their head, and then they walk around like this, and it causes the blood to spurt out. So they walk, and because it's self-mortification. It's not supposed to do anything, you know, any permanent damage, but it is a passion play of sorts. If you look at the Shi'i in England, they walk around, and they hold swords, and just go like this. There's no blood. Right, which I think is quite fascinating. But throughout Europe, throughout Western Europe, you will find, you know, Shi'i processions that look more like a Purim, you know, like a Purim parade because people are dressed up. But in the Middle East, you find Shi'i processions that are quite bloody. And of course, the Sunni mocks the Shi, and the Shi think that this is very important and has to do with their struggle for survival. But that notwithstanding, what's fascinating is that Muharram, the 10th of Muharram, Ashura, in a sense, becomes a day of ascetic commemoration, a day of fasting, a day of self-flagellation, things like that. Okay? Flagellation. Okay.
That day moves, correct.
A few years ago, it was on
Sukkot, and it was on the cover there. I remember what.
Yeah.
It was very interesting
because, well, whatever. Yes, correct. Okay. So I wanna just spend another minute, because then we have 20 minutes for our Torah sources. I wanna spend another minute just talking about what the fasting on Ramadan is supposed to be about according to traditional sources. Because it actually is going to have a lot more in common with Jewish sources than we might have thought. As opposed to the Shia, who, let's say, use this as an ascetic rite that's supposed to be masochistic in a sense, the notion of Ramadan is actually not supposed to be about that at all. The fasting on Ramadan is not about denial. That's not what it's about, as it probably would be in more Christian circles. It's not about denial in Muslim circles. During Ramadan, in number 8, the 9th month of the Islamic calendar, all adult males who are physically able fast from all adult Muslims, excuse me, who are physically able, women fast as well, fast from sunrise to sunset. Abstaining from food, drink, and sexual activity during this period gives Muslims a greater awareness of God's presence and helps them to recognize His blessings in their lives. Ramadan is particularly sacred to Muslims because God sent the first revelation of the Quran to Muhammad during that month. Fasting is also intended to build a greater sense of community by uniting all faithful Muslims through shared traditions and practices. And one more, fasting in the month of Ramadan should not be considered an exercise in denouncing the pleasure one draws from food or sex. The Quran and Prophet most strongly condemn self-mortification and celibacy. It essentially is a month-long ethical and moral orientation program in order to learn how to manage time, food, and other resources, how to build interpersonal relations, and while fully involved in so-called worldly activities, seek guidance from the Quranic work ethics in making economic, social, and cultural behavior both ethical and moral. Sounds pretty idealistic to me. Sounds very nice. Okay? Now, forget everything that we just said. Yes, sir.
And the Shia also observe Ramadan in addition to this.
Yes.
So they add the additional day.
Correct. But remember, it's not until 3 months later. Right? 4 months later. Okay, now let's put all that out of our mind and let's move on to our Torah sources. Let's talk about why we fast on Yom Kippur. Let's get ideas out there. Anybody have any thoughts why we fast on Yom Kippur? Not only fast, why we do the 5 inuyim, why we do the 5 afflictions, fasting, shoes, sincha, or anointing oneself, sleeping with a member of the opposite gender, right? Washing, why we do those things? Yes, Karen. Okay, so you want empathy. Great. It's very, well, okay, good. Empathy. What else? Yeah, Alyssa.
We're supposed to be like angels.
We're supposed to be like angels. And presumably they don't eat. Right? Great. What else? Anybody? Anybody? Anybody new?
It does say so
in the Torah, Charlie. We do fast because it says so in the Torah. Thank you. Torah says. What's wrong with that? Right? Great. Why do we always have to give our own ideas about things, right? And you are?
Shira.
Fasting
is supposed to be with the mindset and connected
inside. There you go. Meaning, do you mind elaborating that on that a little bit more? Why would it connect you with God? Is that because you're not distracted? Is that what you're looking at? You can say no.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably a lot.
Well, you know what, Shira? We're just going to put it up there. Closer to God. That's it.
Yeah.
I hope people don't mind that I do that. I only do that because Rav Soloveitchik did it. So I feel like if he did it, I can do it. Yeah. What else? What else? What else? What else? Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was much bigger on it than Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, but they were both pretty big on it. because it doesn't say this in the Torah. Right? It says that in the King James Version of the Bible. It actually says Lord in the King James Version of the Bible, but, right? Exactly. Okay, what else? Come on, what else? What else? Is that because it's covered? Everything you think is up here already? Really? Come on. It's got to be somebody with an off-the-wall idea at something. Okay, let me try something else. Who here thinks Yom Kippur is a sad day? Who here thinks Yom Kippur is a happy day? Who here thinks Yom Kippur is a painful day? Who here thinks Yom Kippur is supposed to be a painful day? Fearful day. Awesome day. Okay, so, you know, let's get started. There's certainly one one prominent strand among the commentators throughout the ages that suggests that the purpose of the Inuyim is to reach a sense of asceticism, and that asceticism is sort of what allows us, sort of that pain, it's sort of what allows us to focus on being better, okay? Or that lack, that we're supposed to feel a negative, okay? That's the sense. So if we look, I tried to give you things that are not necessarily the most conventional of sources. So like, let's look at the Sforno, for example. Sforno is 14th century Spanish commentator. And he says, number one, Be'asur l'chodesh, on the 10th of the month, Hu Yom HaKippurim, that's the Day of Atonement, Lihit Badot, to confess, Lihit Onein, Gever Al-Chata'av, and for each person to moan about his sins, Ve'eno Yom Simcha V'Tanug, and it's just not a happy day, or a day of enjoyment. Aval Hu Yom Inui, rather, it's a day of affliction, right? Why does it say Be'initem et Nafshatechem, afflict yourself? Because it means afflict yourself. Okay, great. Sefer Achinuch goes further. And if people remember, we talked about the Sefer Achinuch last week. We're not sure who he is, but we have a feeling that Sefer Achinuch was written sometime between the 13th and the 15th century. And you're going to notice a lot of strands in the Sefer Achinuch that are very ascetic. Here comes one. Lefi shehamachal v'hamishteh, because food and drink, v'yeter hana'ot chush hamishush, and other bodily pleasures, ya'oruru hachomer lihimashech achar hatava v'hachit. They will arouse the flesh to become involved or to become drawn to tava, desire, and chait, and sin. Physicality is bad. That's what he's saying. Ve'ein ra'ui le'eved, and it's inappropriate for a slave, b'yom bo'o ladin lifnei Adonav, on the day that he comes to judgment before his master, lavo b'nefesh chashucha, to come with a darkened spirit, u'me'urbevet mitoch ha'machal v'hamishteh, and a spirit that is, you know, full of stuff, me'urbav, literally a mixture, based on food and drink, b'machshavot ha'chomer, with thoughts of the material, asher hi b'tocho. That the nefesh is mired in. Right? Not exactly affliction, asceticism, right? That we're not seeing an ascetic strand here. With whom does that resonate here? You don't have to be embarrassed. Also, no one's going to remember. Right? If they're looking, they're probably thinking, oh, maybe I agree with her, maybe I disagree with her, I don't know. Okay? One more, and I always like to show you the hashlachot, or the nafkaminas, I always like to show you the consequences of this in halacha. Meaning there is a consequence, if you look at Yom Kippur as a certain kind of day, there is a halacha consequence. It has to be reflected in the halacha practice of the day. Obviously it's reflected in not eating and not drinking and all that stuff, but it's also reflected in other places. For example, Masechet Sofrim, an 8th or 9th century text that passes itself off as real Mishnayot from the 2nd century. B'yom HaKippurim, Ein Maskirim Bo Yom Tov. We don't call Yom Kippur in the liturgy, in the davening, a Yom Tov. She'ein Yom Tov, B'yom Tzom. There's no such thing as a holiday that's a fast day. Ela Omrim, rather, what do we say? B'yom Mikra Kodesh Hazeh, on this day of divine convocation or declaration or calling together. B'yom Tzom Ha'asor Hazeh, on the day of this 10th, the fast of the 10th. B'yom mechilat ha'avon hazeh, on the day of the waving of sins. Ve'ein maskirin bo lo moed v'lo simcha. And we also don't mention in the liturgy anything about a moed, again, holiday, or anything about joy. She'ein simcha b'lo achila. How Jewish is this? Because there's no joy without food. Right? Well, we know intuitively. I'm sorry. Everybody should go take a bite there or something. Right? So it comes up in the halakhic literature also. If you look at Yom Kippur as a day of affliction, you're going to have certain hashlachot. You're going to have certain ramifications. I'll give you one more ramification, then we'll go on with the sources. I often see people come to shul with an orange full of clothes in it on Yom Kippur. So my first Yom Kippur working as a member of a clergy at a shul, I was sitting in my seat, and the woman next to me takes out her orange with her clothes, and she says, Alana, do you want to smell this? And I go, I don't know. Let's think about that. You know, I didn't say, obviously I didn't say. Now, if Yom Kippur is a day of affliction, do you think you're allowed to smell that clove? Those clothes? What? Don't worry, we're not finished. Don't worry, Rachel, we're not stopping there. I would never stop with saying, no, the woman was wrong with the clothes. Right? I will never give an example of a person who I know and say that they were wrong. That is like, you sowed fundamental, so you know I'm going to go somewhere positive. But certainly there are poskim, there are decisors who say, you cannot smell that, because inui doesn't just mean the five inuyim, it means any kind of enjoyment. Okay? So you see hashlachot. Mordechai, I'm going to ignore you again, not because I don't care, but just because I want to finish by 8. I totally care. Here's what's interesting. I feel like fast forward to when I'm a mom, I'm going to hear a lot of that, right? You don't, but mom, you really don't care. Okay, it's payment for what I did to my mom. Happy days, 4, 5, and 6. Turns out, if you look in the sources, Yom Kippur is a very happy day. Why would it be a day of affliction? It's a very happy day. Check it out. The last Mishnah in Masechet Tanit, in the tractate Tanit, I'm a Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, number 4. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, Lo hayu yamim tovim liYisrael. There were no better days, no yamim tovim, exactly what Masechet Sofrim says, you don't call Yom Kippur, no better days for the Jewish people than Chamishasar Ba'av, Tu Ba'av, the 15th of Av, Ukiyom HaKippurim, and Yom Kippur. 15th of Av, when many people get engaged, and the 10th of Tishrei, when many people look at people over the machita, like what? Those don't really seem to go together. Well, it's important. We'll get there. Shebahen, that on those days, right? On those days, benot Yerushalayim yotzot bichlei lavan, the young women of Jerusalem would go out wearing white clothing, sheulin that were borrowed, shelo levayeshet mi sheinlo, so that it wouldn't embarrass people who didn't have. Kol hakelim teunim tevila, whatever. We're going to leave that. Uvnot Yerushalayim yotzot v'cholot v'kramim. The young women would go out and they would sing and dance in the vineyards. Umehayu omrot. And what would they say? Bachur, young man, sana einecha, lift your eyes, re'e mata b'rerlecha, and choose a wife for yourself. Happy, happy days. The Tosfot Yom Tov gives an explanation on that Mishnah. He says, why is it a happy day? Piresh harabuvada bartinura. It's Rav Bertinoro, that's the Resh Bet. Shebo nitnu luchot achronot, because as Paul said, that's the day when the second luchot were given. Shebi yud zayin b'tamuz, that on the 17th of Tamuz, shiber haluchot, kidila el. That just like it says earlier in the Mishnah, which we didn't cite, on the 17th of Tamuz is when Moshe broke the luchot. Ubi yud ched, and on the 18th of Tamuz, tachan ha'egel, he ground up the egel and made people drink. Vechazar v'Allah, and then he went back up. V'arba'im yom hitnapal, or hitnapel, and for 40 days he prostrated himself. V'od arba'im yom, and then another 40 days he stayed up there. Shebehen kibel luchot achronot, that during that 40-day period, he got the second set of luchot, and when he comes down, they figure out so that you have 1 month that's 29 days, 1 month that's fuller, so you get to a total to get you to Yom Kippur. He comes down to Yom Kippur with the luchot. Great. It's a happy day specifically because that's when Moshe came down with the luchot. Specifically because that's when the Jewish people got mechila. It's not just a happy day because I'm getting personal mechila, because I'm getting personal waiver of my sins. It's because the community, qua community, got a waiver. Okay? That's why. It's because we got those second luchot. A few hashlachot, a few consequences of looking at Yom Kippur as a day of simcha, of happiness, check this out. Nisuin, weddings. Can you perform a wedding on Yom Kippur? Right? It's like, why would anyone want to perform a wedding on Yom Kippur? It would save a lot of money. Right? Can you perform a wedding on Yom Kippur? So some people are going to say, no, you can't because it's a kinyan, it's an acquisition, and you're not allowed to do a kinyan. Leave the kinyan out. Can you do a wedding on Yom Kippur? No. Yesh min ha-geonim, there are those geonic rabbis, that's 8th, 9th, and 10th centuries. The harishonim, and those between the 10th century and the 15th century. Shekatvu, she'asur la'asotam b'Yom Kippur, you can't, Yom HaKippurim, you can't have nisun, you can't have a marriage on Yom Kippur. Why? Lefi she'im arvin simcha b'simcha. Because you can't mix joy with joy. Which is a halachic reason why, let's say, you can't get married on the chagim. Right? Eim arvin simcha b'simcha. You cannot mix joy with joy. Which is why when my husband Yona and I got engaged on Chol HaMoed Sukkot, and everyone said to me, but how can you get engaged? Eim ma'arvin simcha b'simcha. And I said, until we're really there, no one's really, you know, counting their eggs until they hatch, type of thing. So, right now, we're fine. Right? So there is actually a din about that, whether you can get halachically betrothed, but there's nothing wrong with putting a ring on your finger, ladies, or men putting a ring on someone's finger during Chol HaMoed. One more. Avel, okay? What about a person who, God forbid, loses a family member that requires them to sit Shiva right before Yom Kippur? So often, if right before a Chag, a person loses a family member, the Shiva is canceled, right? A person sits partial Shiva for whatever they can do. What about when Yom Kippur comes? Same thing. Rabbi Gamliel Omer Yom HaKippurim Kiregel. Yom Kippur is treated like a holiday. Shemafsik et Avelut. It stops, it cuts off Avelut, it cuts off Shiva. Kishar Yamim Tovim. Like other Yom Kippurs. Shehukshu kol ha-moedim ze lazeh, because all of the moedim, all of the holidays are connected, are compared to each other. Shenemar behem simcha, that about them it is said that there is a notion of simcha on all of these days. Okay, one more. Bear with me. We're doing so well on time. On the simcha factor, is there a chiyuv seuda? Is there an obligation to eat a meal on Yom Kippur? Yes. Everyone seems so excited. Yes. Everyone's so excited about Yom Kippur. I don't know. What are we thinking about? Having to cook? I don't know. Right? Yes. Maybe. Who knows? But this is where it would come from. Let's look quickly and then we'll move on to the next concept. The Gemara in Yuma, Yoma, however you want. 81b and number 7. Ditani Rav Chiya Barav Midifti. Rav Chiya Barav from the place called Difti says, V'initim enashotecha, and the Torah says, you should afflict yourselves b'tish'ah, right? It says b'tish'ah l'chodesh, on the 9th of the month. I have 3 minutes, right? V'chi b'tish'ah mit'anim, does that happen on the 9th? Do you really fast on the 9th? Do you really afflict yourselves on the 9th? V'alo b'asor mit'anim? Don't you afflict yourself on the 10th? Elo lomar l'cha, but it teaches you kol ochel v'shoteh b'tish'i, anyone who eats and drinks on the 9th, ma'le alav ha-katuv ki'u hitanah, tish'i v'asiri. It's as though the person had Eno and had affliction on those 2 days. So according to many poskim, what that means is you have a chiyuv seuda on Yom Kippur and you push it back to the 9th, which is why it's like both days were Yom Kippur. One is where you fulfilled your chiyuv seuda, the other one is where you fulfilled your chiyuv eating. Okay, we have 3 minutes, we have 2 minutes, and I'm really not willing to go over the time because I don't think it's fair. The next two ideas. One is asceticism. But then you look at the simcha on Yom Kippur and you think that really isn't that really doesn't correspond. It doesn't really work. So the other idea is actually comparing the inui, the affliction, to the iser melacha, to not doing work. And you can look at this on your own time, but I am going to show you number 10. The Sefer HaChinuch, when explaining why you're not allowed to do work, why you're not allowed to do labor on Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to do labor more than other Yom Tovim because you're not allowed to cook. It's just like Shabbos. He says, "Kidei shelo niyet trudim b'shem davar," that we won't be busy with too many things. We won't be distracted. V'nasim kol machshavoteinu v'kol kavanateinu levakesh mechila uslicha me'et adon hakol b'yom hazeh. We'll put all of our thoughts towards asking for forgiveness. I like to call this the. It's not that you're not eating, drinking, smelling, washing. It's that you're eating a divine relationship. You're drinking a divine relationship. You're smelling a divine relationship. All of your senses are engaged in this instead of being engaged in other activities. So that is, a lot of people make a comparison between the Isser Melacha, not doing work, not doing labor, which is supposed to get you to be undistracted, which is what I was getting at, Shira, that it's not ascetic, but it's just keeping you from being distracted, that that's really what we're doing with the Inui. We are shoveling everything else out of the way. And the last is what Alyssa brought up, which I think is a really magnificent way to end, which is asceticism surely is a part of this. And not distracting ourselves surely is a part of this. But both of those things are negative. They're trying to get rid of some static. They're trying to get rid of something. There is a positive. The Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, 13th century, German and French, says, Ita b'pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer. In this midrash, Pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer, Ra'a Sama'el shelo matzah chet b'Yisrael, Sama'el, the angel of death, or Satan, or whatever we would say, he found that the Jews didn't have any sins on Yom Kippur. Va'amar, he says, Ribona olam, yesh lecha am echad k'malachei ashari. You have people who are like angels. Ma'amalachei ashari yichefei regel, af Yisrael yichefei regel. Just like the malachim are barefoot, the Jews are barefoot, no leather. B'yom HaKippurim. Ma'amalachei ashari ein lahem chfatzim, just like the malachei ashari don't jump around. Kach Yisrael umdim al rablam b'yom HaKippurim. Many people have a custom to stand straight on Yom Kippur, like an angel, the way they're pictured in our literature. Ma'amalachei ashari ein behem achila u'shkia, just like the malachim don't even drink. Av Yisrael kein b'yom HaKippurim. Ma'amalachei ashari tzimat shalom b'neim, and this is really what I want to get to. What the malachim have is they have peace among themselves. Af Yisrael b'yom HaKippurim kein. That's how the Jews are like angels. We have peace among ourselves. Ma'amalachei ashari nikiyim mikol chet, just like the malachim have no sin. Af Yisrael kein b'yom HaKippurim. So too the Jews have no sin. So Inui is just one part of that becoming angelic, which goes along with harmony and yichefei regel, all this other stuff. But it's one piece of the puzzle. The last thing that I'll say is that I think it's quite interesting. There is a serious similarity between the way Ramadan is supposed to work and the way Yom Kippur is supposed to work. Namely, that it's true, both of them do involve a sense of fasting that has to do with joy. They're not ascetic fasts. Neither one is a completely ascetic fast, even though there is a measure of asceticism to them. So I hope that sort of looking at how it was taken, you know, I guess Yom Kippur was taken out of the Jewish context and brought somewhere else, but still those basic elements of the joy and the happiness and the revelation and the relationship with the community and things like that, still that was maintained because they're such essential components of Yom Kippur, and hopefully that'll be important in our Yom Kippur. And with that, I give you your 9 minutes and 8 seconds to have a great time, talk amongst yourselves, eat, and stay for Rabbi Morris this year. Thank you for coming. Oh, no need, really.